all, UK industries will be hurt by leaving the European Union. A headline bound to increase pressure on British Prime Minister Theresa May as she pushes ahead with her plans for Brexit. BuzzFeed claims they have leaked analysis from within the British government. Titled, EU Exit Analysis Cross Whitehall Briefing, dated January this year, the report examines three potential Brexit scenarios, and all are worse off after leaving the EU.
Jamie Dimon, one of the biggest names in corporate America, is sticking around, throwing water on the idea he'll run for president of the United States anytime soon. JP Morgan Chase announced Monday that its 61-year-old chairman and CEO has agreed to stay on for about five more years, putting him out of the running for the 2020 race for the White House, at least for now.
Since the election, we have created 2.4 million new jobs, including 200,000 new jobs in manufacturing alone. After years and years of wage stagnation, we are finally seeing rising wages. Unemployment claims have hit a 45-year low. And something I'm very proud of, African-American unemployment and Hispanic-American unemployment stands at the lowest rate ever recorded.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's January 31st, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Today on the broadcast, a recap of last night's State of the Union address. We will have a little bit of analysis on that. Our first guest will join us momentarily. A little bit later in the program, we'll have a guest talking about social engagement and its involvement with better student success. The University of Chicago is involved in this. That'll be a little bit later in the program. Full analysis and market reaction to yesterday's stock drop as well as we move through this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures are up 82 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well. Around the rest of the globe, markets are mixed in Europe with the FTSE in London off and the DAX and CAC are higher. In Asia this morning, markets are mixed as well with the Nikkei off nearly a full percent, down 193 points, but the Hang Seng is higher by about 297 points, which is up almost a full percentage point there. Crude oil is lower this morning, $64.17 a barrel, down about 32 cents. Here are some stories that we're watching for you this morning. Of course, yesterday, a big drop on Wall Street. It's a steepest one-day decline since August 16th, the Standard & Poor's, and the Dow Jones Industrials saw its biggest decline since May, losing almost 1.5%. The NASDAQ slumped as well, almost a full percent. Today, we'll be watching to see if any of that rebuilds. Of course, right now, as we mentioned, the futures are looking for a positive open on Wall Street a little bit later on this morning. A couple of other headlines. U.S. authorities are investigating Apple's slowing of older phones. According to published reports, the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg are reporting that the Department of Justice and the Securities and Exchange Commission are probing whether Apple violated securities laws. In December, Apple apologized for the slowdown after a blogger's test revealed the secret of practice. Apple has previously said that they have done this to protect the phones from being destroyed by software upgrades that run out the battery too fast and other problems with its batteries. Facebook says it's banning ads for financial products often associated with deceptive practices, including those involving cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. The new policy says ads cannot promote such services, which also include those involving initial coin offerings. Those offerings are a means of raising capital by selling digital currency that can then be traded. The digital coins or tokens represent an interest to the company. Facebook says examples of fraudulent ads include phrases like use your retirement funds to buy Bitcoin. It was President Trump's first State of the Union address last night, his second before a joint session of Congress. Lots of reaction this morning and analysis. We turn to Josh Scacco, who is an assistant professor at the Brian Lamb School of Communications at Purdue University this morning. Josh, welcome back to The Opening Bell. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
I wonder if you're struck, as I was, that the speech really didn't outline new policy, and that's sort of reflected by the fact that the president, unlike other past presidents, is not going out on the road this week to push any policies.
Yeah, so I actually just looked at the White House schedule today, and the president is bound in Washington right now, which is a little bit of a deviation from past practice. Presidents traditionally take the roadshow after the State of the Union to battleground states or to other places around the country to sell particular aspects of their agenda. So one of the things that I noticed last night, as you talked about, Steve, is that the president focused a lot on his accomplishments or what the White House is billing as his accomplishments during his first year. Tax reform, regulation reform, those types of things that will play well with the Republican base. And so it's interesting to see that his pivot to issues that will be coming out this year was very much long on messaging but short on details.
Everybody had portrayed this, and even the White House did yesterday ahead of the speech, that this would be sort of a speech to try to unify the country. Do you think it failed in that regard?
I think that there were aspects of the speech that would definitely assist with unification. So talking about veterans issues as well as infrastructure in some ways. But there are also, Donald Trump likes to use this tactic of taking a very common value that Americans can get behind, you know, the American flag and God We Trust, and then adding some partisan language to it or adding a partisan policy proposal where you'll see Democrats peel away. And I think that's what you saw a lot of times. So, for example, on infrastructure last night, Donald Trump talks about wanting to fill potholes, wanting to fix roads and bridges, which every motorist is behind, and especially in the Midwest. But when you add, for example, a specific item behind it, like public-private partnerships, you start to see Democrats, peel away and get somewhat uncomfortable about those types of enterprises. So in some ways, you saw his calls for bipartisanship. In other ways, though, the devil will be in the details related to whether or not there's true bipartisanship on these pieces of legislation going forward.
The issue of bipartisanship couldn't have been any more stark in long shots of the speech area in the House, with the chamber where the president was delivering his speech last night. On one side, the Democrats, who remained mostly seated and rarely applauded, and on the other side, the Republicans, who were animated and gave him, I think, 100 standing ovations. That is a big issue when it comes to moving forward, isn't it?
It definitely is. It illustrates that partisan polarization has gripped the U.S. Congress, just as it has trickled down to the American public. We see it in the votes that Congress takes. We see it in the elections, passed in 2016, as well as coming, as well we will most likely see in 2018. And, you know, one of the things that is interesting about this is so much of the standing ovations or the sitting and staring at the president is for optics purposes. Republican voters, Republican base voters, they want to see their Republican representatives and senators standing behind the president and cheering and hollering. And Democrats, who are revved up in relation to the upcoming midterm elections, they want to see their representatives standing up to the president and not necessarily in the mood to compromise. So in an election year, the president lays out a laundry list of policy items that he would like Congress to confront, but whether or not Congress actually gets to most of them is doubtful, considering the politics of what is to come in November.
Josh, hang on with us. We're going to continue with Josh Scacco this morning, assistant professor at the Brian Lamb School of Communication at Purdue University.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:23. We're on with Josh Scacco this morning, assistant professor at the Brian Lamb School of Communications at Purdue University. And Josh, new polling out this morning says an approval rating of 75% of those who watched the president's speech last night, but a majority of those were probably Republicans, weren't they?
Yeah, so this is this is common with modern presidential speeches, where essentially the individuals who watch these types of events in the evenings now are the hardcore supporters of a president. Again, it's reflection of where we are in terms of partisan polarization, but also reflecting the fact that, you know, Democrats and as well as many independents don't necessarily want to watch this particular president. It's not unique to Donald Trump. The same thing happened under Barack Obama. The same thing happened under George W. Bush. So what you're seeing here is that the instant polls, as many news outlets, for example, CBS News was running an instant poll about this. And so the approval of the speech and the high metrics for the speech are reflected by the fact that I think in that instant poll, it was made up of 45% Republicans and only 25% Democrats, I believe. And so that's something that your listeners, you know, we should all take with a grain of salt in terms of these instant polls can oftentimes are just snap judgments of a speech. What we know in terms of going back a number of years on these is that State of the Union addresses and these types of evening addresses rarely move the president's approval rating significantly. And if they do move the president's approval rating, it's temporarily, and the effects are usually gone within a week to 2 weeks.
On the flip side of that, the Twitter says this was the most tweeted State of the Union address. Lots of people taking to social media in one way or another in regards to the speech. I know as you look at the history of these addresses, that has to be a new phenomena, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So the engagement around the State of the Union, particularly online, is something that both Barack Obama and now Donald Trump have tried to implement. And there's good reason for this. One is that, again, coming into a midterm election year, many of your most ardent supporters are in these online spaces talking about the address. For Donald Trump tonight, it also meant that he was using the address to raise money for his reelection, and in that particular instance, social media becomes a way to engage supporters to raise money.
As a matter of fact, on his website, on his campaign website, they were flashing sort of like a crawl of donors who were giving in real time. I think that's a new thing. Josh, stood out in my mind some things we didn't hear from the speech that I thought we might hear something about. Didn't mention anything about the DACA kids, whether or not he's going to extend those protections. Nothing about the Russian interference in the election. Nothing about the Mueller investigation.
Yeah, so this is I was thinking about this last night, and related to the Russia investigation, I wasn't expecting anything on Russia, and the reason why is most likely it is occupying quite a bit of the president's time, just as in the heat of the Monica Lewinsky scandal in the late 1990s, it was occupying quite a bit of Bill Clinton's time. Yet in both cases, both presidents choose not to mention it in the State of the Union. So in this particular instance, highlighting a potential weakness to his administration wouldn't have been with his overall purposes of talking about a positive economic agenda and really projecting that positive message. Related to DACA, I think that the president was most likely trying to emphasize the harder line aspects of his immigration proposal, particularly with regard to changes in visa structure for individuals trying to come into the United States. And that is something that conservatives can get around. Ultimately, if there's to be any compromise on immigration and on DACA, then it's going to have to involve some more conservative hardline elements, and especially in terms of limiting illegal but also legal immigration into the United States.
Josh, we have just about a minute left. Let me get your thoughts on the Democratic response. Joe Kennedy III.
Yeah, so these responses are very tough for anyone to give, and you can understand why. You look and you see the president in the well of the U.S. House of Representatives, with the trappings of the presidency all around him, and then it transfers to a response. And in this case, Congressman Kennedy did the best that he could do with the difficult circumstance. Adding a live audience, really helped give life to the speech. So many of these speeches in the past have been lifeless, as, you know, a politician just looks directly at the camera. But I think Congressman Kennedy had to thread a needle here, because these messages by incumbent presidents are inherently optimistic.
Josh,
Congressman Kennedy,
go ahead.
Yeah, but no, I was just going to say Congressman Kennedy also had to emphasize some positive elements in his speech that I think he was able to carry out in some ways.
It'll be interesting to see how that talent proceeds. Usually they put the rising talent in those positions in parties as their responses, don't they?
Absolutely. And I use the example of in 2012, former Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels, who was considering a run for the presidential nomination at that time, also gave the response. Marco Rubio gave the response a few years later for the Republicans. So these are rising stars in the party. It's a difficult task under the best of circumstances. And what you saw is just in the case of Mitch Daniels, who gave a very nice response in 2012. I think on the Democratic side, Congressman Kennedy also gave a passable to fairly good response last night.
All right, Josh, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your insight.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
All right, Josh Gacko, assistant professor at the Brian Lamb School of Communication at Purdue University.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Chicago investing platform N1 Finance made a decision last December. It would drop fees from its app, allowing users to invest for free. The decision has caused the startup's popularity to skyrocket in the last month, as it's adding 600 to 700 new accounts every day, 10 times higher than it was before, with daily inflows hitting as high as $1 million. Its CEO said the company now holds roughly $100 million in total assets after being live for just over 1 year. Uber looked into buying Chicago-based freight logistics company Load Delivered, according to Recode, but the deal ultimately fell through. Uber was looking into the company as recently as this month. And San Francisco-based software company Flexport announced plans to open a Chicago office in Fulton Market, a move that would bring 100 jobs to the Chicago area within the next 2 years. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. Can social engagement lead to better student access or success and outcomes? It's the business of education we'll focus on in this segment. Sonia Wang is with us. She's the director of the University of Chicago's Carter Woodson campus and co-founder of Change Makers Fair. Sonia, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So give us a sense of what we're talking about here. Sort of set the stage for us.
Sure. So a lot of researchers recently have been talking about the ways in which civic engagement projects can truly contribute towards raising student achievement. So when we're talking about civic engagement, we're thinking about the ways in which our students take their learning and connect it beyond the classroom walls. So really thinking about interdisciplinary, taking what's going on within our community, society, and being able to reflect that onto their own identities, have an agency, and as a result, be able to increase their knowledge, but as well as apply their knowledge to the real life issues that they're seeing as concerns as young people living in Chicago.
And so an example of that civic engagement would be what, let's say, working, volunteering in the community, helping with a social service agency?
So it can look a lot of different ways. At my campus, which is the Woodlawn campus, actually, there's two main ways that we've seen our students really grow and develop. One is kind of project-based learning. So we've had an annual project called the Change Makers Data Fair, where our students are doing research across disciplines around real life issues and really digging deep into it, and then thinking about action planning, like how can I engage with issues like Black Lives Matter or healthcare politics as a young person and impact my community. The other way is thinking about how do I engage with organizations that exists. And so like what you're saying, thinking about volunteering, community service, thinking even about global engagement. So we have actually a group of students who are with the Leaders for Change club, I guess you can say, and they're actually going to Ecuador this summer, and this is the second time we're doing this, to engage in service projects in a different community and thinking about how do I, again, access my skills and how do I work with other people to improve just the quality of life for our, you know, and learn while we're doing that.
And so what is the measure of the success here, the students' success? Is it better grades? Is it a better attitude? Is it something that you can measure with the grade, or is it something a little bit more abstract?
You know, it's both and. So the University of Chicago's Consortium on School Research actually published a report back in 2015. It's called the Foundations for Young Adult Success and a developmental framework. That's what it's called. And the things that they kind of really explored were these non-cognitive skills, skills that we often overlook, but things like agency and this notion of integrated identity and this feeling of competence, which translates into the classroom when we think about, one, wanting to be in school, so we have increased attendance. And when you're in school, you're more apt to then gain the knowledge, the instruction that's being given, so that impacts grades. And research has also shown that grades and attendance are the main indicating factor of high school graduation and then going on to college. And so there's kind of a wide variety here, but I do think it really starts with developing and honing and anchoring those non-cognitive skills allowing students in our case, in a middle school campus, an opportunity to really see their value and how they engage with the content that they learn and how they want to progress in the world that they exist within.
You know, as you talk about this, I recall on my schooling way back when, we had something called civics class. And it's sort of, it was sort of the same where we were out in the community wherever we lived, helping, learning about how our community worked and volunteering. It sounds similar, is it?
I think a bit. I think the thing about the way in which we're thinking about civic engagement right now is learning about how we engage with the world, our society, and thinking about like building this trait of a service, but also really bringing it into the world of these content classes, right? So that the notion of mathematics, science, social studies, and literacy are not being learned in isolation. Oftentimes, that's kind of how the world of education has approached learning, is that these things, this knowledge is really important, but they're separated out. And when we start integrating those subjects, we see how there's value of that within the real things that we do on a day-to-day basis. And so it's almost like civics class, times 1,000,
yeah,
because we're integrating it within the actual things, you know, thinking about how does my understanding of angles or statistics and the way in which I read and think about evidence-based reasoning, how does that all come into play when it comes to being a productive social change agent.
And the beauty of what we've been talking about here is you sort of bring it all together with the Change Makers Fair. Tell us about that and why that's important for the success of what we've been covering here.
Yeah, I think the Change Maker Data Fair, it's an end of year kind of like a capstone project for our seventh graders, and this year will be our third year iteration of doing this, and it gives our students a platform to really exercise their voice and really share out all the things that they learn. They've become experts on a topic that they've really dug into and seen kind of that connection I was talking about and the ways that it impacts other young people, but also their parents and families and adults in the society and the community that they're in. And at the Changemaker Data Fair, they're presenting, you know, they have a station and, you know, we have a ton of, you know, within the school as well as community come visit, and they get to share not just what they've learned, but what they feel very passionate about needs to happen. Part of this project is not only, you know, analyzing the data, doing the research, looking at the history, but also creating an action plan of what they feel really passionate about. And then, you know, for many of our students, they find really tangible ways of thinking about, now, how do I move forward with this? In eighth grade, we do something called the Exit Project. And so it's almost like a senior thesis, only as an eighth grader. And students are used, for many students, they're kind of taking that knowledge from seventh grade and into their eighth grade and thinking about kind of what is a prototype they want to develop that will improve life, right? And so the knowledge carries over, and there's another platform at eighth grade where they can, again, exercise their speaking and be able to have a platform for their voice. And I think that's one of the most important things that our young people, because they're intelligent, smart, they're learning, they're innovative, they need to have spaces where they can speak up and speak out.
So often we hear nothing but negative news about young people, and this, you must see firsthand how positive this is, and I bet you're optimistic seeing these kids excel in this area.
Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing because it's so transformative. You know, when they start the process, they don't have, they're not as knowledgeable, or they think they know, right? And then as they're learning about it, they have these aha moments. And it's so cool because I get to go in and out of the classrooms and see, you know, what they're learning, how they're growing. And students are so excited to share, you know, they're like, Ms. Lang, I just found this out. Now I'm going to think about it this way, or I've changed my thinking. And our teachers do an amazing job at kind of developing that journey and supporting that journey. The Changemaker Data Fair was really kind of the idea of our seventh grade math teacher, Kate Carter, and she's kind of really collaborated with our English teacher, Devere Peters, and it's just kind of spiraled and kind of become this really massive, beautiful thing. And it's so cool to see. It's so cool to see how students, teachers, the school, and families really can collaborate and do something really beautiful that I really believe impacts our young people and will carry on as they go into high school and college.
Sonia, thank you for being with us this morning and sharing this. It's certainly inspirational, and best of luck to you and your students going forward.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Sonia Wang is the director of the University of Chicago's Woodlawn campus, co-founder of Changemakers Fair. And you can find more about all of this at uchicagocharter.org to see more about the efforts of these wonderful young people.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures up 76 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well. The latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Winter wheat futures moved to their highest level in at least 4 months yesterday, led by a move, more than 3% rally in hard red winter wheat futures after the government cut condition ratings for the drought-hit U.S. plains crop. Soybeans and corn also advanced on technical buying and short covering and concerns that poor weather in South America could trim production in major exporters Argentina and Brazil. The market closed yesterday at the Board of Trade, saw March soybeans up 8 cents, closing above $10 a bushel by a quarter of a cent. March corn up 2.5, and March wheat up 8.75. In the livestock trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange yesterday, kind of interesting in that live cattle futures hit the day's high in the first minute of trade and then turned around and went south. The February live cattle contract ending down 95 cents a hundredweight, but the April feeder cattle contract ended higher, up 77 cents a hundredweight. And congratulations to the U.S. Forest Service member who was honored for his courageous actions during the historic wildfire season of 2017. He was the guest of President and Mrs. Trump in the balcony last night at the State of the Union message. Congratulations to a member of the Forest Service staff, USDA. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Wednesday, January 31st. In major business economic events scheduled for today, the National Association of Realtors releases pending home sales index for December. Federal Reserve policymakers are meeting. They are the Federal Open Market Committee. There is not an interest rate hike expected, just a meeting of the Federal Reserve policymakers. Lots of earnings to talk about today. Boeing will report before the market opens. Facebook and Microsoft in there as well as Anthem, PayPal, eBay, and Deerfield-based Mondelez International, the snack food company, the Oreo maker, also reports earnings today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, January 31st.